All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I am your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I am joined by SB Nation's Charles McDonald. We're going to be talking more about the Falcons' recent coaching changes.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. I've been covering the Falcons for many years at FalFans.com, on Twitter at FalFans, and, of course, I host this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today, I am joined by my good friend Charles McDonald. He is the senior NFL desk writer at SB Nation. You guys know him. He's been a frequent guest on this podcast over the years. Frankly, he got his start on this podcast, if I do say so myself. He's been covering the Falcons at the Falcoholic. You see him on the Setting Edge podcast. He wrote for Football Outsiders last year. So Charles is moving on up in the world. He has left this podcast in the dust, but he has decided to grace us with his presence to give us some more insights and thoughts on sort of the Falcons' 2018 season, their coaching changes and whatnot. So welcome back to the show, Charles.
Well, thanks for having me. It's always good to be back and talk about our favorite team that never causes us any grief at any time ever.
So, you know, when you Black Monday hit and the Falcons got rid of all three coordinators, Steve Sarkisian on offense, Marquon Manuel on defense, and my beloved Keith Armstrong on special teams, what were your thoughts sort of when you saw that the Falcons basically cleaned house?
The only one that kind of surprised me was Keith Armstrong, just because, you know, like you see a lot of people, I guess on Twitter, talk about how the Falcons special teams was trash, but really, like, I thought it was pretty good outside of like the return game stuff. I mean, Justin Hardy was pretty much like a complete non-factor back there, but they ranked 10th in special teams DVOA. Like, I didn't think it was a bad unit by any means, and certainly not like their issues, but like Sark getting fired and Manuel getting fired, especially when you see that Quinn wanted to take over the defense for himself and call plays again. That one wasn't very surprising. You know, I guess the offense did do a lot better this year than last year, but still, you know, you can still see some moments. Like if you look at Bill Connolly's advanced stats on SB Nation, like they weren't very good on first and second down compared to the league, but they got bailed out on third down a lot. So I think that maybe they just kind of want a little bit more consistency there and maybe figure out how to run the ball a bit better. So I guess the Sark and Manuel firings didn't surprised me a lot, but the Keith Armstrong one did surprise me a little bit, just because they put resources into special teams, like signing Justin Bethel, drafting Gage and Foy, and like they did improve in that area, but they still, I guess the return game just wasn't enough for them, and that's why he lost his job. So that's pretty much how I feel about those three.
Okay, you talk about sort of Sark and the offense, and you talk about the improvement. Were you did you think, given that the growth it did show from 2017 to 2018, as you mentioned, and I agree with you there, did you feel like there was a potential that you could see a similar growth from 2018 to 2019, or was this sort of a situation where being patient and hoping that things continue to grow may not have been in the best interest of the team moving forward?
Yeah, honestly, by the end of the season, I didn't really care if Sark was brought back or not, just because at some point, like, this offense can kind of run itself a little bit, just because you have, you know, guys like Alex Mack, Matt Ryan, Julio, you know, just three stalwarts at their position. Like, there's only really a floor of how bad it can be. And even though they didn't score much in 2017, like, they still moved the ball effectively. They just kind of sputtered when it got down to converting in the red zone or trying to put points on the board, and that was kind of a mixture of everyone's fault, not just Sark's, but, you know, they had some bad drops too that got turned into turnovers, and everyone remembers the famous Julio drop versus the Panthers when he broke wide open on that double move and then just completely lost sight of the ball in the end zone. So you know, I think that there's a chance that they could have taken off in 2019 and, you know, gotten back to close to that 2016 level. But even this year, you look at how much the passing game improved, and just looking at the raw numbers, Matt Ryan, like, he had a year that was not quite as efficient as his 2016 season, but still pretty good. But the Falcons, they still didn't score at any like they didn't score at the same rate. Like they scored 540 points in 2016. They scored 414 points this year. So like you still see there's a disconnect between having all these talented players and routinely being able to just torch defenses on a week-to-week basis. So I think that I can see like Dan Quinn getting into a situation where he wants to be able to run the ball more. And maybe he looked at those toss sweeps that Sark loved to run with Tevin Coleman and Calvin Ridley. And you can see maybe that's an area that they want to improve on. And just when you look at Dan Quinn's comments today about wanting to get or wanting to stick with being an outside zone team, maybe that's like the basis that they want to do, because even when they were like rolling through teams in 2016 and even 2015 a little bit, like you didn't really see the heavy reliance on that toss game to try to get guys out in space. It was more, you know, we're going to run outside zone, we're going to read the blocks in the second level, and we're going to just get up the field that way and set everything up off of that. So I also think that maybe Devonta Freeman being out for a while kind of hurt what they wanted to do on the ground. But still, like, you look at the raw passing output, it looks great, but then you look at how many points they actually scored, and there's still a disconnect between what this offense can do and what they are doing.
I agree. All right. We'll talk a little bit more about these coaching changes and what the Falcons need to do to get their team and their 2019 back on track in a bit. But just because it's the offseason doesn't mean that you guys want to stop listening to the Locked On NFL podcast with host Matt Williamson, where Matt is going to continue to have great guests on every day throughout the week. Find that wherever you get your Locked On podcast, your team every day. So I'm here with SB Nation's Charles McDonald. We're talking about the Falcons coaching changes. Moving forward, you know, a lot of craziness is sort of happening on Twitter with people, you know, a lot of hand-wringing with sort of the Falcons coaching hires and interviews and whatnot. So so far on today's press conference, Dan Quinn, he was asked directly sort of how many candidates had they interviewed so far. He said two. We can sort of speculate that based off of the various reports that that's Mike Mularkey and I guess Dirk Koetter.
I think Koetter is going to be this weekend, and then they've already interviewed Bevel.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right. I'm sorry. I saw Jeff Schultz tweeted last night that they had already talked to Koetter, and I was counting that. But you're right. That's fair. So, you know, a lot of people are making a big deal. You know, a lot of people seem to be on the Gary Kubiak bandwagon. I know you and I were sort of, you know, looking when, you know, the reports first, I think it broke last November in 2017 that Gary Kubiak was interested in getting back into coaching. We were sort of, or at least I'll speak for myself, but sort of looking at that, I was like, oh, that's a move I wouldn't have a problem with the Falcons making. So I'm curious, sort of looking at all this news and scuttlebutt with who the Falcons are looking at, what are your thoughts?
You know, I think Gary Kubiak makes a lot of sense just when you look at like what was the Falcons' most successful year in offense, 2016, and who was the head coach for you know, those years when Kyle Shanahan was in Houston lighting it up with Matt Schaub of all people, and you know, Andre Johnson was obviously a beast, but now you kind of look back at Schaub, his career, and be like, oh, you know, that kind of could have been a product of coaching, but Gary Kubiak was the head coach for that. He was offensive coordinator when they were rolling with guys like Selvin Young and Mike Anderson in the early 2000s in the Broncos. And then obviously you look at his run with Denver, and it's not like when he was the head coach in Denver, it's not like his quarterback play was ever great, because he got there after Peyton Manning had already put up all those records in 2013. So you kind of look at what was left of Peyton Manning and Trevor Siemian, and like they were able to produce like some functional offenses with quarterbacks that weren't really functional players at the time. So I think when you look at where Kubiak has recently come from and the amount of talent the Falcons have, like that's obviously an enticing situation, and he's called plays like the Falcons have been most successful at. So Kubiak is one, but I gotta say, like when they announced that Mike Mularkey was getting interviewed for the job, I was pretty much like, okay, anybody but Mike Mularkey, and we can just move on past this and get on to 2019. Like Koetter wouldn't be a horrible hire to me. Even Bevel is kind of like, I kind of want to see what Bevel can do when he's not with the Tom Cable coach offensive line. And obviously, I think some fans are a little bit concerned about Russell Wilson and Matt Ryan being such different quarterbacks. But I still think that, you know, that wouldn't be the worst hire in the world. It's just pretty much like just not malarkey, because we've seen him fail pretty hard since he left the Falcons in 2011. 2012, he was the Jaguars head coach, I think. And then he went on to coach the Titans. And, you know, we saw how that all fell apart when they only really got that playoff win because Marcus Mariota happened to catch a pass back, batted down to himself and run it in for a touchdown. So you kind of see like the randomness in there that got Mike Mularkey that playoff win versus Kansas City. So that's pretty much how I feel. Anyone but Mike Mularkey, Kubiak is who I'll be really pleased with. I just kind of want somebody new. If they can't get Kubiak, like maybe I know Cliff Kingsbury is kind of a stretch out there, but even just someone that we haven't heard of, like someone where we can't really look at the track record and just kind of be a little bit more optimistic about what's going to happen. Even that would be better than hiring Mike Mularkey, just given his recent track record.
That's all fair. Yeah. I do wonder a little bit if sort of all the candidates that are listed, you know, or at least publicly known, if those are all the candidates and if there aren't sort of discussions going on in sort of back channels and whatnot. So that to me is sort of curious to find out. So I guess we'll have an answer in a couple of days or.
And just one thing I forgot to say, on the Kubiak front, John Elway did say the other day that he expects Kubiak to be back with the Broncos organization as he's a senior personnel advisor. So I don't know if you want to get too hyped up about Kubiak potentially coming back when John Elway did already publicly say he expects him to be back with the team.
Yeah, I mean, you know, those guys are boys. They basically, you know, he was the Jason Garrett to Elway's Troy Aikman for like, I don't know, he was like the backup quarterback in Denver for like 15 years or something like that.
Yeah, it was a long time.
Yeah, so, you know, most of the times I'd be like, oh yeah, you take that with a grain of salt. But since they are literally joined at the hip for like 20 years of their lives, then I wouldn't necessarily think that. But we'll see how that plays out. What are your sort of thoughts on Dan Quinn taking over the defensive play calling and sort of, you know, a lot of people have been discussing whether or not that is going to lead to greater issues with his ability to manage the game, which has been certain things that people have questioned in the past. What are your thoughts on that?
The way that I felt about it was because we all remember like that stretch in 2016, like after Trufant got hurt and Dan Quinn took over the reins from Richard Smith. Like that might be some of the best defense they've played in the Dan Quinn era. So like you look at that and you're like, oh, okay, you know, maybe that could be something that works out in their favor again. But then you kind of look at some of the stuff like where, okay, you know, Dan Quinn was kind of a little sloppy with the game management and the clock management, and throwing more on his plate on game day might not be the most conducive thing to the Falcons' success. But then you hear him say today in the press conference that he wants to hire, he pretty much someone wants to hire someone to do that for him and like have that be their role in the sideline. So, you know, if that person is good at their job, then I'm for Dan Quinn being the defensive coordinator again. And I kind of respect him just being like, look, if we fail again in 2019 and I end up getting fired, like we can just point this back to me and it'll be all my fault. Like I do like that accountability. Now we just kind of need to see the results on the field.
Yeah. Yeah. My stance is kind of like, you know, there's probably a couple of games every year, like one or two games where you feel like Dan Quinn's questionable game management sort of is very problematic for the Falcons and potentially can cost them some games. But I think, you know, the hope is that if that's the case, then it'll be balanced out by, you know, twice as many or three times as many games that the Falcons could now potentially win just from getting a little bit of a boost with their defensive play calling. So that maybe, you know, going into the final 2 or 3 minutes of each half, you're not always guaranteed to give up a score. Like that's been basically the case for the Falcons since, you know, forever, it seems like, with their 2 minute defense where it's just guaranteed 7 points pretty much every time. And if you only get 3 points, it's like, wow, that team really blew it because, you know, some receiver dropped a wide open touchdown or something ridiculous like that. So that's my sort of hope with the whole him taking play over play calling, and hopefully it leads to more positives, even if there are some questions about his game management. We will have a little bit more to talk about these various subjects, including what Charles thinks about the Falcons' major issues heading into the offseason in just a moment. But just in case you guys are tired of football, maybe you want to check out the NBA side of the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can find a daily podcast devoted to all 30 NBA teams, including the Locked On Hawks podcast with host Brad Rowland. Find that wherever you get your Locked On podcasts, your NBA team every day. So, Charles, let's talk about this offseason. And it seems like everybody's talking about the team being focused on the trenches on both sides of the ball, improving the offensive line, improving the defensive line. I talked with Dave Choate on yesterday's podcast, and he seemed to be a similar mindset of mine, where it feels a lot more confident that the Falcons can make some significant gains along the defensive line this offseason, but have question marks over how much improvement we can expect with the offensive line play, particularly given sort of the nature of offensive line play, where you need to have guys sort of play together and build some continuity before you can really get things to click. I'm curious sort of what are your thoughts on sort of the outlook for the Falcons this offseason as far as the trenches go?
Oh, man. I mean, I would probably prioritize defensive line over offensive line, just because I think you have to make up more ground on the defensive line. Like, there's only so much you can do, especially like if they stay with Ryan Schrader at right tackle. Like, you're already locked into Alex Mack and Jake Matthews. Like, that's three of your five spots. And then really, how much room do you have to navigate like those guard situations? It's kind of like if you can get back to like, okay, so even Alex Mack this year, like, I thought he started off pretty slow, but then he kind of got into a little bit of a groove. I thought Jake Matthews was pretty stellar all season, and Schrader obviously struggled quite a bit to the point that he got benched for Tyson Braylo late in the year until that week 17 game. So, like, if they stick with Schrader, there's really not much you can do at the guard spots unless you want to take one at 14. And honestly, I just haven't looked at this draft class enough yet to know if there are any names out there. So I think, like, you really got to go heavy on defensive line, just because I think you can mask more on the defensive side of the ball. If you can get to a spot where your corners aren't having to cover forever, because I personally thought that Desmond Trufant was a lot better this year than people gave him credit for, like, especially in the back half of the season. I thought that he started to look like the old True. And if you can just get to a point like where you're not having to cover for so long, and the only like consistently reliable pass rush you have is Grady Jarrett or even Jack Crawford, I think that does a lot more for your team than going out and trying to find like a guard upgrade. So if they can, you know, first of all, lock up Grady Jarrett, that's got to be priority number one for them this offseason, and then find some more guys to rotate in at defensive end and defensive tackle, and not just like, you know, literal bodies, like guys who can actually play and give some oomph up there, then I think that helps your team more than it does just trying to find a guy to plug in at offensive guard when you already have three spots solidified.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I'm sort of the same way. And I just think I think this draft class, at least from what I've seen, the offensive line group is better than most years has been recently. But I also feel like if you're basically going to have to resort to plugging rookies in, whether that's first round, second round, third round picks or whatever, like, you know, you can only expect so much improvement if those are your best options moving forward. So I think that means sort of you compensate by just basically, you know, going all in and trying to make the defensive line as best as possible and hope that this defense can make any sort of jump that whatever deficiencies you may have on offense, which we know aren't many, but the offensive line is one, that you can sort of mask that by playing much, much better on that side of the ball. So, Charles, I appreciate you coming on and chatting with me. I'm curious, are you headed to the Senior Bowl this year?
I don't think I am this year, actually, which is going to be my first time in a few years not going, but I'll be around like the other. I'll be at the combine and going to hit up some pro days too. So, if probably won't be at the Senior Bowl, but if you catch me out at the combine and I'm sober, we can definitely chat it up.
Okay. You know, if you guys find yourself in Naptown, Indianapolis, come February, then definitely catch Charles. I guess in the afternoons, because you'll probably be over your hangover by that point. Yeah, so.
Yeah, in the afternoon. Take me out to dinner.
All right, Charles. Anything you got planned coming up on SB Nation and whatnot?
Just playoff coverage. Like, obviously, you know, the playoffs start this upcoming weekend, and this is going to be like our last big push for the season until we start switching towards draft coverage and free agency, stuff like that. So, you know, I know the Falcons aren't in it, but we're going to have a lot of great content up on the site as we move through the month of January. So definitely check that out.
Are we going to get any Setting the Edge podcasts between now and April?
Oh, we're going to try to get at least like three.
Okay. All right. Well, guys, you can definitely check that out. And of course, you can hit up Charles on Twitter at @4verts. Anything else you need to plug before we get out of here?
No, that's about it. Just keep following on Twitter at @4verts. Check out, I got a link in my bio to like everything I've written at SB Nation so far this year. Like, I haven't tweeted everything out because it's a lot of fluff, but there's some gems in there. So if you want to just scroll through that, it's definitely worth your time.
Okay. Charles, man, I appreciate it. And I look forward to talking with you a little closer to, I don't know, the offseason draft or whatever. Whenever feel like coming back on, you can.
All right, let me know.
All right, man. Talk to you later. All right, guys, another podcast in the books. Appreciate Charles for coming on. And, yeah, we'll be back Monday with a Q&A. So if you have any questions, you can send those in to me on Twitter. I'm at @FalFans, of course. But just go ahead, send it over to Locked On Falcons. That's the show's Twitter handle. The show's Facebook page is Locked On Falcons, where you can also submit questions. You can also send an email at LockedOnFalcons@mail.com or leave a comment at FalFans.com, where the podcast is posted daily. So that's the plan. We'll, you know, I know maybe some of you are like, oh, Aaron, you know, you haven't really shared your illustrious opinions about the Falcons coaching search. For me, it's one of those things where, I think Kubiak is number one based off of the candidates so far. I would probably put Bevel 2. Outside of those, based off of the guys that have been linked, I don't necessarily want Cutter. I don't necessarily want Malarkey back. So it's really those two candidates. Maybe there's other options, outside options that haven't been publicized yet. I'd be eager for the Falcons to broaden their search beyond, you know, these four guys that have sort of been linked to them. Beyond that. But for me, it's like I don't really necessarily have a horse in the race. The Falcons will hire who they were going to hire. That person is going to do a good job or a bad job. We'll find out in September. You know, for the most part, sort of the hand-wringing and sort of the banging the hands on the table and the heads against the wall that people tend to do on Twitter this time of year when it comes to these coaching searches, I just sort of stay away from, generally speaking. You know, I'll be very public with going anti-Cutter because I feel like there's a narrative that Cutter is good, and I'm like, I don't think he's good. But we'll see how that plays out. And so, you know, Dan Quinn will hire who he's going to hire, and then we'll figure out how that person is. And, you know, for the most part, my expectations are people will either love the hire or they'll hate it. And then those that hate it will basically over the next 3 weeks or 3 months convince themselves that it's not so bad. And then by the time we get to July, you'll still have people talking about, oh, this Falcon team is a Super Bowl team. And it's like, wait, but you don't think they have good play calling. So anyway, that's me, you know, throwing shade at people, but that's what I do. So there you have it, guys. We'll be back Monday with a Q&A. And until then.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.